This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Everyone, this is Basma Farhat, and welcome to the People Speak radio show. Here we believe when the people speak, we make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak live by going to our website at www.thepeoplespeakradio.org. There you can listen to our past shows as well on iPod Ready Archive section that is on, again, the www.thepeoplespeakradio.org. Or you can tune in as you have now on BBS Radio. Tonight, the people speak with Father Roy Bourgeois. In 1990, Father Roy founded the School of America's Watch, an office that does research on the U.S. Army School of the Americas, now renamed the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, or WINSEC, at Fort Benning, Georgia. Each year, the school trains hundreds of soldiers from Latin America and other countries in combat skills, all paid for by the U.S. taxpayers. We'd like to welcome you to our show, Father Roy. How are you this evening?
Good. It's good to be with you.
Well, it's an honor having you here. Your record precedes you. You have a lot of fans here. Father Roy, the School of the Americas is actually located, one of the offices is actually located outside of the main entrance of Fort Benning and another branch in Washington, D.C. Am I correct?
That's correct. I came here in 1990 and settled in this little apartment right outside of the main gate of Fort Benning. And later, a few years later, we opened up our national office in Washington, D.C. But we began here with 10 of us. What brought us here was the U.S. Army School of the Americas that every year was training about 1,200, 1,300 soldiers from Latin America in combat skills. And what we were able to document early on was that this training was causing untold suffering and death to the people of their home countries, especially in countries like El Salvador, Guatemala, Chile, and other countries. And we came here first to learn more about the issue, to educate ourselves. I've come to realize that there's a whole lot of ignorance about U.S. foreign policy in Latin America and other countries of the world. Most people in the United States have no idea what our foreign policy is doing to those on the receiving end. But I must say, we discovered here a school of assassins, a school that was all paid for by our U.S. Taxes to the tune of millions of dollars every year. The killing, the massacres, the torture, the rape that was being carried out in many of these countries was really being done in our name. And so we had to educate ourselves, and what we learned was, again, that this school, while well-known in Latin America, here in the United States, it was hiding behind this wall of secrecy. Our job was going to be a difficult one. We had to educate ourselves, the public, the media, including members of Congress, about this issue. Many of them knew very little, if nothing, about the school.
When you say that you started to do research on the School of the Americas, what exactly do you mean by research? What are you learning? What are your techniques for learning these things? Can you share some of that with us?
Well, first, what brought me here, maybe I should just mention, was my experience in Latin America. Not long before return from my work in Bolivia, where I lived under a brutal dictator, General Hugo Banzer, who came into power in Bolivia in the early 70s in a violent coup, and a dictator that my country, the United States, supported. But he was not alone. And during the 70s and 80s, we were supporting many dictators of Latin America, Central America, and it was in my fifth year in Bolivia that I was arrested and forced out of the country because of my work in human rights, because of living in this slum with the poor of Bolivia. And when one does that in Latin America, you become educated. The poor of Bolivia really became my teachers. They began to teach me about my country's foreign policy, about they introduced to me their struggle, a struggle for justice, a struggle trying to work themselves out of this very, very difficult life where most of the people were struggling for survival. And it was there that I first was introduced to my country's foreign policy in Latin America. Now, when I came back from Bolivia, I became involved in El Salvador. I could not return to Bolivia. And El Salvador was far worse than Bolivia. It was here, I must say, I've never seen anything quite like El Salvador. It was worse even than Vietnam, where I had served as a naval officer. It was in El Salvador, the slaughter of the innocents. We were pumping about $1 million a day into that country, where 14 families owned 60% of the land. And there were many, many being killed. Religious leaders like Bishop Oscar Romero. We had a lot of labor leaders killed. But most of those were the landless farmers who were speaking out for life, simply couldn't make it on the dollar a day they were being paid. Now, when I came back from El Salvador, we learned that this is actually, it was November the 16th, 1989, which is a very significant date in El Salvador. There were six Jesuit priests, a young mother, their co-worker, and her teenage daughter, Selena. They were massacred. The military was very upset with the Jesuits because they were educating the world about what was going on in this little country, El Salvador. They entered their campus after midnight that November the 16th and dragged these six Jesuits out of their rooms and killed them, shot them at close range, along with the two women co-workers. That made the front pages of our newspapers in the U.S. and throughout the world. Members of Congress, many of them educated by some of the Jesuit universities here in the United States, there are like 28 of their universities here, they send a congressional task force to investigate. They come back from El Salvador reporting that those responsible, those who did the killing, were trained at the U.S. Army School of the Americas at Fort Benning, Georgia. Again, that's when I came, was joined by friends, Charlie Litke, Vietnam veteran, recipient of the Congressional Medal of Honor. We had two Dominican priests, one who had just had been forced out of El Salvador with a death threat. We had other veterans, others who had lived and worked in Latin America. And again, what we had to do was try to document what was going on here. We were helped along by some members of Congress, by Amnesty International, and also we got information, very important information, through the Freedom of Information Act. This was an institution, a combat school, that was all paid for by the U.S. public, and therefore we had a right to what was going on at the school. We demanded in the early days the names of all of those soldiers being trained here, their rank, and the countries they were from. And little by little, we began to piece together what became very well known as a school of assassins. And another, just a turning point also, was in May of 1993, when the United Nations Truth Commission report on El Salvador was made public. That UN report got a lot of front page coverage. And in that report, it was revealed that the Salvadoran soldiers who assassinated Archbishop Oscar Romero, gunned down in this church in his country, they were trained at the School of the Americas at Fort Benning. The 28 who massacred the six Jesuits and the two women, 19 of them graduates. One other high-profile case, there were four U.S. church women who went to El Salvador to work with the poor. Three of them were nuns, two of them of the Maronil Order, the same religious order that I'm a member of. I'm sorry?
If I'm not mistaken, Father, were not two of them friends of yours?
They were close friends. They were Maura Clark and Ida Ford, the Marinole sisters. And when that happened to the church women, they were raped, they were killed by the Salvadoran military. And really, when that happened, it brought El Salvador very close to many of us here in the U.S., not only those of Marinole, but to many, many people of faith, people of goodwill. And people began to ask, you know, what's going on in this little country? And what was going on, we were arming and training a military, the Salvadoran military, that was at war with their people. Again, it was the slaughter of innocents. And many, many of those soldiers during the killing were being armed and trained at the U.S. Army School of the Americas. So as we began now to get a hold of this information, especially when the news came out from the United Nations Truth Commission report, we began to travel. I began to go into, along with others, into universities. As a Catholic priest, I had an opportunity to speak at many Catholic churches around the country, peace groups. And little by little, word began to spread about this school down at Fort Benning, Georgia. And it wasn't too long after that a movement began to blossom. And let me just say perhaps that, you know, we began with 10 of us. Our very first action here when we arrived, we had a three-day gathering. We began to reflect. We were kindred spirits. We had known each other for years. Many of us had worked in Latin America and knew firsthand the brutality of the military of Latin America. But so then we decided our first action would be a very serious water-only fast. And for the next 35 days, we camped out at the main gate of Fort Benning. We didn't eat. We sustained ourselves on water. And it was through that fast that we were able to begin. It was the very beginning of exposing this issue to the media, to others in the U.S. Members of Congress began to hear about it. And then after our fast was over, it was very important to continue to do the research and to take the information that we were gathering and take it to Washington. It was the next year that we gathered on the steps of the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C., for a 40-day fast. And it was then that we met Representative Congressman Joseph Kennedy, Joe Moakley, who headed the investigation to El Salvador to investigate the massacre of the Jesuits and the two women. And it was then that we began now to meet with members of Congress who over the years began to introduce bills calling for the closing of the school. And so little by little, let me just say, each year we decided also in November to gather at the main gate of Fort Benning, to call for the closing of the school, to express our solidarity with sisters and brothers of Latin America who we saw as the victim of our country's foreign policy. And that first gathering, again, we had 10 of us, and then the next year, 100 came, and then 500, and then 1,000. Just last month, this last November, we had over 20,000 who came. Most of those who gathered, over half, were college, university, and high school students. A lot of the students have now come into our movement. We also had a lot of military veterans. We had a lot of nuns who joined our movement in the very beginning, lots of senior citizens, parents, and their children. And what this is really all about, this big vigil, this protest at the main gate of Fort Benning every November, is to call for the closing of a school that, again, continues to cause suffering and death to the people of Latin America. We want the school closed. We also want our country's foreign policy in Latin America to change. Our policy in Latin America really has been rooted in greed. the over 60,000 soldiers who have trained at this combat school and continue to come and be trained here. They provide in Latin America the muscle for U.S. foreign policy. They protect the economic interests of those multinational corporations who exploit the cheap labor and the resources of these countries.
Father Roy, there was a Jesuit by the name of Father Deer that wrote, and I'm going to read this short paragraph. 25 years later, El Salvador has become Iraq, Afghanistan, Haiti, Colombia, indeed the whole world. Not long ago, some Pentagon general announced that the United States was now using the same strategy it employed in El Salvador on Iraq. In El Salvador, we helped to kill some 75,000 people, including Archbishop Romero, the four churchwomen, and the six Jesuits. We trained the death squads at the School of America. We support the torture and rape of thousands. We rewarded the generals, the junta, and the handful of millionaires who stole the nation's resources. Instead of repenting of the evils it did in El Salvador and so many other places, our government is now intent on turning the rest of the world into the killing fields of El Salvador. It could care less about the innocent lives lost in El Salvador, Iraq, or elsewhere. Do you believe the same thing is happening in Iraq at the hands of the trainees of the School of the Americas?
I do, without a doubt. I went to Iraq just before the invasion with a group of people like myself who were very concerned about the war and what it would mean to the people of Iraq. I also went because of being a veteran, because of being in the military for 4 years and knowing what war can do to others and to ourselves. And what I found in Iraq, of course, were people. We found ourselves there. You know, I mean, the people there are us. We are them. They didn't want to die. They knew that the war was imminent, and when the bombs came, that thousands and thousands would die. Well, I came back, as many did, and we couldn't stop the invasion. And years have passed now, and now many, many people, the majority, the polls are showing that the majority in our country realize that it was a mistake. I've come to the conclusion that it was not a mistake. It was a crime against humanity. What we did to El Salvador, the over 75,000, most of them killed by their military personnel that we armed and trained, that was a crime against humanity. What we did to Guatemala, the over 200,000 killed there, most of them of the indigenous, the Mayans. What we did to the people of Chile when Henry Kissinger went there and supported, when our State Department, our government, got rid of Salvador Allende and brought in this brutal dictator, Augusto Pinochet, who ruled for the next 19 years where thousands were killed. These are crimes against humanity. What I find very sad, of course, is that we here in the United States, we simply don't understand what our country has done in our name to the people of these countries, like El Salvador, Guatemala, Chile, and also, of course, Iraq, where many, many more have been killed in Iraq. The number I'm hearing now, it's could be well over a million, not to mention the over 2 million who are displaced in the country or have been forced to leave Iraq.
Actually, I believe the refugee status right now is currently at 4 million.
Incredible. Yes, that's what I've been reading. And again, I mean, this may sound a little strong, but I do believe that President Bush should be brought to trial along with the other architects of the war, especially Cheney. They should be brought to an international court of justice and be tried for their crimes against humanity. I mean, will this happen? I don't think so. But what's important, I travel a lot. I give a lot of talks at high schools and colleges. And I say to students especially, if, you know, when they ask you to go off to these wars now in Iraq or Afghanistan, there can be nothing more serious. And they are asking you, of course, to go off to war, a war that they will not go off to and fight in. They're cowards. They will not go, nor will their sons and daughters go. They will send you to fight the wars for them. And just know that you can say no to that.
Father, what is the response of the youth when you approach them in that way and with the information that you present them with?
Well, first of all, I mean, I share in a very personal way my own experience, my own ignorance. When I grew up in a little town in Louisiana, we were cut off from a bigger world. We believed our leaders, including those at the Pentagon, when they said we had to go off to this war in Vietnam. I believed our cause was noble. They said we were going to be the liberators. And I bought into that as we bought into the lies of Iraq. And I went to Vietnam in my fourth year as a young naval officer, volunteering to go off to Vietnam for shore duty. And that I share with the students. It became a turning point in my life. The violence there, the death that was so close, losing friends, being wounded there, realizing that also that my death would cause untold grieving and suffering to my family for many years, something that I had never thought about until I got there. And what I say to the students, I just feel lucky. I feel fortunate that I was able to come back home alive. And what I've learned is that we are not made for war. And if someone says to you that you've got to go off to war and fight, you better really, really question what they're saying, because there's a good chance that you're going to die or kill others, and you're going to come back and do battle with these demons for the rest of your life. Now, the way that I just share with them in a personal way, and I find the majority of the students, high school students, will say to me, because they are the ones who are being recruited, especially those in the poorer high schools, this is where most of the recruits going off to this war in Iraq are coming from. The college students, they say to me, you know, Iraq is very distant. They're not going. They don't have to serve, and they're not going to volunteer. But for the high school students, it's different. They're offering them, you know, a college education when they come back from the war. Of course, they don't say that. They may not come back alive. But most, I would say 99% of the high school students where I speak, most of those students, the majority, will agree with me that this war is unjust, that it shouldn't happen, and they're not about to sign up.
Father, let me ask you a few questions about the School of the Americas itself. First of all, as I had asked earlier, when you say research, what is it that you're finding out about the School of America, and what are some of the techniques that are using that you're using to find out this information? And if I'm not mistaken, you've been arrested for some of this and spent about 4 years in jail during your tenure as the founder of the School of America Watch.
Yes, well, I think we have to ask first, after I address this issue of research and the whole role of the school, it's important to talk about why we went to prison. Over 200 of our, now it's over 250 of our people have gone to prison and have served collectively over 50 years for these nonviolent protests against the school. Now, but let me say, what we ask, of course, you know, what's being said about the purpose of the school? What's its goal? Why is it in existence? It began way back in the 1940s, in 1946 in Panama, and they said it was done all through a charter in Congress, all up front through Congress, supported by the U.S. taxpayers. They said to bring stability to Latin America. And then later they said the role of the school was to stop the spread of communism, of Marxism in Latin America. And then when the Berlin Wall fell, there was a problem. They began to say things like, you know, we now have to teach democracy to Latin American soldiers. Now, I think I just want for our listeners to understand this. Having been in the military, and many in our movement have been in the military, one thing that we have learned is that you do not learn democracy in the military. It's not a democratic institution. So the basic question, because what they're saying now since the name change back in 2000, they said, you know, we are now teaching democracy. We are very transparent now. Well, we say, how do you teach democracy in an institution that's not democratic? How do you teach democracy behind these two chain-link fences topped with barbed wire with signs that say no trespassing? And I live right outside of these fences. I mean, 50 feet away. Every morning when I awake and look out the window, there's a big sign, welcome to Fort Benning, no trespassing, razor wire fences. And so we say something else that's very important. Most of the courses that these soldiers are coming here to learn deal with guns. They're combat courses. As Major Blair, former instructor at the school, says, when you join the military, you join the military, the Army, to learn how to kill. And that's what the purpose of the military is. Now, we ask, how do you teach democracy behind the barrel of a gun? Lastly, we have a problem now. The last 4 years, they have refused to give us the names of the soldiers being trained here. Before, through the Freedom of Information Act, we always had access and a right to that information. The names of those instructors, those being trained here, the countries they're from, their rank, and the courses that they're being trained in. Now, for the last 4 years, they give us a list of hundreds of names. The only thing that's not scratched out, blacked out, are the countries. But all of the names are blacked out. And right now we have members of Congress that are very upset with this, and they are working very closely with us to get those names. Very important, too, there was a vote in Congress in 3 months ago. We lost by 6 votes calling it a bill. Calling for the cutting off of funding to the school. We came within 6 votes of cutting off the funding. We have another vote that's coming up for a vote in Congress this coming year, probably in February or March. And right now, it's very important. Many people are working on their members of Congress who've been doing this for years. One of the ways, of course, we can shut down the school is through Congress. It's the most important way to go. But without funds, it can't operate. Another sign of hope for us, we've been visiting over the last 2 years 13 countries in Latin America. We've met with their heads of state. We've met with their defense ministers, human rights leaders, calling on them to sever their ties to the school. And I'm happy to report, after meeting with the presidents of different countries, defense ministers, 5 countries have severed their ties, have pulled out their troops. They being Bolivia, Venezuela, Argentina, Uruguay, and just recently we met with President Oscar Arias in Costa Rica. And Costa Rica joined the other 4 countries in severing their ties to the school. This coming year, we'll be traveling to 7 other countries, Ecuador, Nicaragua, the Dominican Republic, Brazil, and a couple of other countries, to call on their leaders to do what other countries are doing, not participating in this training.
And do you believe that this will be the last year for the School of Americas to be alive?
We're getting there. I think it's now on life support, but I must say we're up against a giant. We're up against the Pentagon, the State Department. This school is very, very important to the empire, and it's interesting just to say to our listeners what our experience was like in visiting these 13 countries in Latin America over the last year and a half. There is, of course, a sea change taking place in Latin America. Countries that have been very, very dominated by the United States are breaking free, especially countries like Bolivia, Venezuela, Argentina, Uruguay, Chile, and other countries. And what we heard from presidents and defense ministers and others is that our country, they refer to our country, it's amazing, the word most often used now is El Imperio. They see us as the empire. Many refer to us as the
That's a big word, El Imperio. Father, on that note, I do have to take a break right now, and I want you to hold that thought, because that is an important thing, and I don't want to cut it short. We are going to take a break right now, and for those of you that would like to speak to Father Roy Bourgeois, the telephone number is toll-free, 888-228-4494. Again, 888-228-4494. And please visit us at our website, www.thepeoplespeakradio.org. For upcoming information, show information, and iPod Ready podcast. We are going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with you. Thank you very much.
We invite you to a new International Politics Lobby 8, a chat room on Paltalk, the world's largest online community with over 4 million users. Talk or text to people from all over the world. Participate in discussion and debate about politics and other issues. Or just sit back and watch and listen. Open 24/7, a new International Politics Lobby 8 in the Social Issues Politics category on Paltalk.
This is Pete Seeger. What country comes to mind when you hear this? The government illegally spies on civilians, produces phony news reports. People are imprisoned without charge or access to a lawyer. Prisoners are tortured and killed, and an illegal war launched on the basis of lies in which illegal weapons are used against civilians, against journalists and hospitals. Unfortunately, the United States government is behind these actions. Fortunately, our Constitution has a remedy. It's called impeachment. Ask your Congress member to impeach George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. This is Basma Farhat with the People Speak Radio Show. And tonight's guest is Father Roy Bourgeois, who is the founder of the School of America Watch and an unbelievable humanitarian father. Just before our break, you were talking about what the world... We do have a caller on the line, but briefly, I would like to touch on that statement that you made, that the world views us as imperial, I believe you said?
Yeah, el imperio, the empire. They see us. They refer to our country as the empire. And what they say to us is that, you know, in our meetings with heads of state and defense ministers and others, we were often interrupted as we introduced all of this documentation and so many documents that we had with us. They would interrupt us and say, you know, we know this school very well. We have been on the receiving end. And they also remind us that our country has caused a lot of repression, suffering, and death to their people. And what they say to us is that we are welcome in their country, pero no como antes, not as before, not as the empire, not as the conquistadors. They know that we have been there to exploit the cheap labor of their people and the vast resources. And what's going on in Latin America, in many countries, they are electing leaders that are now speaking the language of the poor. The resources, they are saying, is not for the empire. They're for our country and our people. So what we heard was very simple, that we are welcome in Latin America, but as a partner in their development and their moving toward democracy, but not as we, as a nation, as an empire, been operating there for many, many years, exploiting their people and their resources. Can the United States go to these countries as a partner? That is the question we must ask. Under President Bush, I do not think it's possible.
Thank you very much. I agree with you. I don't believe that under this administration. I think the desire of this administration is certainly the antithesis of that. First of all, I have one statement from Neely from Houston, who would like to thank you for coming on to this program, hopes that you continue to spread this information, as this is the first time she has ever heard about it. We are getting the message out. We also have a caller on the line. Mayo, can you please give us a brief question for Father Bourgeois, and then we can, and we thank you for calling in.
Yes, certainly I can. Hello, my name is Nele. I'm from Houston. Good evening, Father. It's an honor to speak with you. I never heard about this call. I heard about Foreign Legion Army. Probably it is the same. But I never heard about a school like this in the United States. And I would like for you to spread the news more and more so we can participate, too, in going against it. This was my question to you. Thank you so much, Father.
Well, thank you for calling. I might add, I mean, you're not alone. While we had over 20,000 people here and, you know, tens of thousands in our movement were not here, there is still a large segment of the people in our country who are very ignorant of this school, who have never heard of it before. And so, of course, the challenge before us is to reach out to more and more people. I'm happy to say that mainstream media has, over the years, picked up on this, the New York Times, Washington Post. I mean, editorials appeared in major newspapers over the years, in major newspapers, the Los Angeles Times, the Chicago Tribune, the Atlanta Constitution, the Des Moines Register right out of the heartland, the Boston Globe, Washington Post, and the New York Times, all calling in their editorials for the closing of a school that they said taught torture. And that's what really, I must bring this up because it's so important. In 1996, front page of the Washington Post, an article about the torture manuals that were discovered in the curriculum at the school, which got really the school in big trouble. And it was then that more and more members of Congress began to break their silence on this school and call for its closure. And that's when, actually in year 2000, because so many members of Congress simply said to the Pentagon they could no longer support the School of the Americas, and as our movement began to grow larger and larger, and it became a public relations nightmare for the Pentagon, they were forced to change the name of the school to the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation. We say it's a new school, but the same shame. It's like taking a bottle of poison and calling it, or putting a label on it, penicillin. It's still deadly. It's still about men with guns. So we're not going away. We're going to continue. We're going to keep our hands on the plow until this school is closed.
And for those of you that don't know, Father just celebrated the 18th annual march, do you call it a march or a protest, Father, of the
yes.
closing of the School of the Americas. And there are people from all over the world that are coming to attend this march every year. Dennis Kucinich was there this year. We also had Cynthia McKinney, staunch supporters of the closing of the school. And as you said, Father, there isn't anybody that doesn't say, Father, as far as some of the graduates of the School of America, and I don't want anybody to forget the new name, the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation. Now, there's a piece of work for a name, isn't there, Father? What exactly do you think their intention was behind the changing of the name? Did they think that by changing the name that people would no longer recognize it?
Yeah, well, it was a tag. I mean, they had no choice. I mean, they could no longer get the support in Congress that they needed to sustain the school. And because this school is so important for U.S. foreign policy in Latin America, they had to hold on to it. I want to also mention the call of, I wanted to mention that there's so much more information that, of course, that I can't get out on the air tonight. We do have a website that I'll mention again before we leave the air, but our website where there's so much more information can be found is www.soaw.org. That's soaw.org. And there will be lots of photos of our recent vigil when over 20,000 came. They'll also give an update of our votes in Congress. They'll also talk about our Latin America initiative on our website, the countries that have withdrawn from the school, and other countries we'll be visiting. Also, they
incredible information, yes. As a matter of fact, just so you know, Father, we have been posting the site in our virtual auditorium, and we also have it posted on the links to our site as well. So for those of you that, again, that's www.soaw.org. Please, it's a valuable organization. Go support it, visit it. We have a caller on with a question on line 3. Caller, what is your name? Where are you calling from? And please give us your brief question for Father Roy.
This is Steve Deese. I'm in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And first of all, Father, I'd like to thank you not only for taking your time to speak with us, but for all the great humanitarian things you're doing and standing for what you stand for. I, like you, am a Vietnam vet. And, I, like you, also am against war because of it. But my question to you would be, and we discuss it in these rooms that we participate in quite often, what do you think the single most thing that we as individuals can do to help stop this type of horror that we're seeing our government do? Thank you for taking my call. Thank you, Basma.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for that important question. I like you. I struggle with that. You know, what am I to do when I know about an issue that is causing all of this suffering and death to others? What I've learned over the years is that there's not one thing that will close down the school or that will bring about peace in a situation that's violent. There's not one thing that's going to bring the troops home from Iraq. We need a whole lot of people doing a whole lot of things. Now, our movement, including myself, they've been very inspired by Archbishop Oscar Romero, one of the many killed by graduates of this school that we're trying to shut down. Before he was assassinated, Bishop Romero said, "Let those who have a voice speak out for the voiceless, speak out for peace, speak out for justice." And I take his words to heart. He did that. Others have done that. And we can do that. What's very, very important, first of all, is to break our silence. when we learn of an issue, I mentioned that I think ignorance is our greatest enemy. Often we don't know about issues, but when we get the knowledge, when we are really aware of what's going on certain issues, we have a responsibility, I feel, to speak out and to speak clearly and also to act boldly. One of the things that, of course, we have to do is start talking with those closest to us, family members, co-workers, where we also begin perhaps to take resources. One of the things I thought we had to do early on when the movement began to grow was to produce a short documentary, which we made called School of Assassins. We were able to get Susan Sarandon to narrate it. And that little video, 20 minutes, School of Assassins, sold over 18,000 copies, and it was seen by thousands of college students, people of faith, people of goodwill, and it helped to educate. And when it got an Oscar nomination, it helped also to give it some credibility. But what I've learned, again, now, coming back, for example, when we gather here, this is what people are trying to do. We come together because we have a voice, we have gifts, we gather in the name of peace. Our movement early on, we felt it was important to root it in nonviolence. We drew on the wisdom and the experience of Dr. Martin Luther King, Mahatma Gandhi, Cesar Chavez, Dorothy Day, Rosa Parks, and others. Their way, the way of nonviolence, was to be our way. Now, we touched just briefly earlier on this issue of civil disobedience. Most people, of course, cannot do these acts of civil disobedience that will bring us to prison. But I and others have been in a position where we could, and so we would go on to Fort Benning. We'd cross that line. And when we did, they said we were trespassing. And when we trespassed, they arrested us. They brought us to trial. When they brought us to trial, we spoke truth to power. We tried to put our country's foreign policy on trial. They sent us to prison. I've been there for a little over 4 years. Over 200 of our people have gone to prison. When they sent us to prison, we discovered that they couldn't silence us. The truth can't be silenced. And we spoke from our cells in prisons around the country. This last November, 11 of our people, three of them in their 70s, a number of them in their 20s, a real diverse group. And they crossed the line January the 28th. They have to come now back to Columbus, Georgia, to the federal courthouse where they will be brought to trial, and they will be going to prison. The sentence usually is 6 months. And I can only say that when they send us to prison, it simply energizes the movement. But again, most of the 20,000 plus who came here, 11 crossed the line. The majority of the people, they're writing letters to Congress. They're writing letters to editors, which are very, very important. They're speaking out on this issue with family members and others close to them. And, you know, they get resources that they can help spread the word. And these are just a few things I feel that we can do.
Father Bourgeois, we have 5 minutes left, and what I would like you to do, if you could please, is tell us in these 5 minutes why, again, recap the most important aspects of why we need, as Americans, to start to realize what is going on with this particular school and with our foreign policy and how it is affecting people and how it's going to affect the Iraq and Iran, because those are our next battlefields. From everything that we can see and all intents and purposes, it looks like that's where we're headed next. Can you encompass that in just a brief time, please?
Yes, Bessie, let me say, I think whenever I speak, and I do a lot of public speaking, you know, throughout the year, and mostly in colleges, high schools, church groups, peace groups, and what I often say is it's very important that we leave the United States on a delegation, that we go to countries to educate ourselves. We don't go to teach. We don't go to bring anything, but we go to receive knowledge. When I went, for example, to Vietnam years ago as a young naval officer, I was so ignorant of that part of the world. I was so ignorant of the Vietnam's culture, their religious beliefs, the history so much older than our own. And this is what I found in Latin America. I was like a child. I had to learn so much about these countries. And I found that when I went to Iraq. We were so ignorant about Iraq and its history. And that ignorance will get us in big trouble. I went to, just in July, I joined a delegation with Global Exchange, university teacher, professors and students. We had 15 of us. We went to Iran for 2 weeks. And why did I go to Iran? Because I do not believe what President Bush, this administration, and some of the media are saying about Iran. They're meeting those war drums again. And it was very important for me to go to Iran to talk with other people. I believe in citizen diplomacy, because we cannot depend upon our leaders who are very aggressive and always talking about war rather than peace. We've got to go to these countries and meet with the people. And the people there, what we found, were very, very warm to us, friendly. And simply they said, you know, America good, Bush donkey. And this is, I'm listening to Bush today. He can't talk about peace.
Like that.
It's always
America
war.
Donkey.
Donkey. America good. Bush donkey. And, they even, many see their own president as a donkey.
I have to agree with them on that.
What's important, though, it's so important. Peace is so important. We cannot let our leaders determine our foreign policy for us. We got to think of citizen diplomacy. And again, one other thing I think what's going on, most people I meet in my travels are really looking for hope. We don't, and this is what happens when we go to war, we lose hope. This is what happened when I went to Vietnam. I lost my hope. And today, when we gather 20,000 strong here, these were hope seekers. When we come together in the name of peace, when we come together and work for peace, we find hope. And this is what I'm finding as I travel. Many, many people are looking for hope, and we don't find hope, I find, in leaders who are aggressive, who are always thinking about war. And I'm hoping, of course, that we can start putting into leadership positions, presidents and others, members of Congress, people who are seekers of hope, people who talk more about peace than war. And again, I think it's very important for us to educate ourselves, and one of the most educational things that we can do, I think, is to start questioning, if possible, to go to other countries on delegations. And I say this a lot to students, because we have so much to learn, especially if we live here in the United States. And one of the other issues, again, I would highly recommend people to go back to our website, get more information, perhaps the resources that are available. And I do believe that if we work for peace, we can't do anything simply alone, but when we come together as a community, every Saturday, in communities around the country, small groups gather in front of churches or at a main intersection, or for example, here in Columbus, Georgia, and other small cities and towns, they gather to say, bring the troops home.
Well, on that note, I'm afraid we are out of time, and that is the absolute best thing that we could have, bring the troops home. Thank you, Father Roy Bourgeois, founder of the School of America Watch. Thank you very much for being with us. Next week's guest, folks, is Julia Butterfly. Julia is an environmentalist and an author. This is a woman that sat in a tree for 2 years. She's an incredible human being. You can listen to the People Speak Live every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Time by going to our site. If you're not in the West Coast area,
and going to the www.thepeoplespeakradio.org. There you can listen to our shows live, and you can also access our archives for our iPod Ready, or you can go to BBS Radio. Thank you very much, and thank you, Father, for being our guest tonight. It has been an honor, and we hope to bring you back soon.
Thank you. It's been a joy.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of the fast, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.